All right, so we're starting a study where we're going to be 20 weeks with the book of Kings. And you'll see why I said that briefly. So we're continuing the study of the books of history. We just finished the books of 1 and 2 Samuel. And 2 Samuel kind of ends with David kind of getting towards, maturing a little more than he was when we first popped onto the scene killing giants, right? So 1 Kings, we're going to be getting to that. But just, we're going to do a brief introduction, and we're going to kind of introduce both books together. The book of Kings, by its name. And the Hebrews called the book Samuel and Kings. Any guesses as to why they called them Samuel and Kings? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have, and I'm talking about like 1 and 2 Samuel that is called Samuel. And 1 and 2 Kings they're called Kings. Because they were one scroll. They were not divided like we have them today. I kind of threw you off there, I'm sorry. So the two books, those two books were placed in the prophets because they were works of the prophets. They were a collection of the prophets writing the things that took place in Jerusalem and in Judah and Israel. And in the Greek, when we have a Greek writing of the Old Testament, the Greeks separate them up, and you have first, second, third, and fourth kingdoms. So they divide the book of Samuel and the book of Kings into four books, the books of kingdoms, and they put it in the section of history, which, you know, as you read these books, they sound like history books, right? When you're reading 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings. In the Latin, they divide them very similarly, 1st and 2nd and 3rd and 4th Kings. And then in our Bibles, if you look in your table of contents, we have 1st and 2nd Samuel and 1st and 2nd Kings. They're divided up because in a codex, is what they're called, what an early version of a book, they would be huge if they were written into codex form. So they were made into two books instead of one. So that gives us a name why we have them broken up and why they're listed the way they are in our Bibles today. 1 and 2 Kings, just to give you some information about it, it coincides with 2 Chronicles. So that kind of gives us an idea, a little bit about kind of putting the books together. It covers a period of 386 years. Now, is it uncommon for a book of the Bible to cover a large period of history? Yeah, Genesis covers a few years, right? It's just a few. So it's not uncommon for a book to cover, you know, a span of history. And as you look at these numbers up here, you kind of might get an idea of an outline of the books of 1 and 2 Kings, right? We have 40 years of Solomon's reign. We have 210 years of the divided kingdom. And then you have Judah alone for 136 years. So that might give us a clue as to what the outline of these two books might look like, right? So here is just a basic information about that. And then Jeremiah is considered to be the author. Nowhere in the book does it say, I, Jeremiah, wrote this. It doesn't say that. But we can, based on what information we read about in Kings, determine that it was somebody, probably a prophet during that time, that wrote it. Tradition says that Jeremiah wrote it. There's some strong arguments for the case of Jeremiah writing it. And so it was written probably between 560 to 539 B.C., ish, somewhere in there. So y'all understand ish, right? Everybody knows ish. So it's that when you start getting into dates, unless you can coincide a date specifically with an event or with a king or with something, dates in that time period are kind of ish, somewhere in there. So that kind of gives an idea, ballpark, of the date of the writing of this book, which means it's what? It's old. It's old. It's back there some time. Again, outline, this is not a surprise, right? Solomon's reign, we could deal with the first 11 chapters of 1 Kings. We have the divided kingdom, 1 Kings chapter 12 through 2 Kings chapter 17. And as we study this book, we're going to study it as though it's one book. We're not going to divide it up into two books. We're just going to go right on into 2 Kings just to keep it kind of like it originally was. It's an easier study that way. And then we have Judah alone, chapters 18 through 25. So this will be our basic outline. And each night we'll go through and have an outline that we'll be going through in our study of these books. So that gives us the basic information, and we'll give more information, obviously, about some of these things as we go through the text. But that gives us a time stamp of what's going on. We're going to be dealing with several prophets also during this time. Specifically today, we'll be talking about Nathan, and we'll be plugging in other prophets. So a lot of like the minor prophets and things and the major prophets will be able to be plugged into this letter as they'll coincide with several of the kings. We'll also be dealing with a lot of kings and a lot of crazy in these two books, as royal families tend to have some of that. So we'll be dealing with that as well. So it'll be exciting. It'll be an exciting ride. I'm glad you're along for the study of 1 and 2 Kings. So let's start this. The beginning of rule for Solomon. We start in 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 1. And what do we open up with? Opening words are? David's old. That's how we open up, right? No, we just throw it out there, right? There's no beating around the bush about that. Now, King David was old, advanced in age. And so the first 10 verses of this chapter, we have a conspiracy. Now, is it a surprise that we're dealing with a conspiracy? You remember how many of you were along for our study of 1 and 2 Samuel? Were there a few conspiracies there? When we start looking at the change of a kingdom or change of authority, there's a conspiracy. And in this case, there is another conspiracy. And we'll talk about that. But David is advanced in age. And we have sort of a situation here opening up with the health of David. He can't stay warm. I know people like that. It doesn't matter where the thermostat's set, they're not going to be warm. It doesn't matter if they have socks on with batteries that warm their toes, they're still not going to be warm. So in this case, David can't stay warm. And so what do they do? And as you read this text, these first few verses, they find a girl, right? This Abishag the Shunammite. Now what? Do they just find some random girl to go out on the street and say, "Hey, you, come here"? What do they do to find? What are the qualities that they're looking for in this girl? She's a pretty and a virgin. Now, let's just understand that this is somebody. The Shunammite is not an Israelite. They were not allowed to, or not supposed to, make slaves of their own kinsmen. So, and when you give the king something, you usually give nice things to a king, right? So that is sort of along the lines of what we're dealing with here. Now, so they find this girl. She basically snuggles up to him, lays with him in order for him to stay warm because he can't otherwise. And the girl's very beautiful. And she became, and the verse 4 says, she became the king's nurse, served him, but the new American Standard says, did not cohabit with her. What does it say in the King James or New King James? Did not know her. So we're not talking about that sort of relationship here. I mean, he knew her name. You guys know what I'm talking about in King James, right? When we talk about know somebody. Okay. All right. So that's what we're talking about there. Well, that wasn't a part of this relationship. All right. Now, this name's going to come up later on. All right. So remember Abishag the Shunammite. Wouldn't recommend that as a name for anybody. But anyway, remember that name. Now, who do we have, verse 5? Who do we open up with here? Adonijah, who was a son of Haggith, also not a name I'd recommend for anybody. What did he do? What did he do in verse 5? He got some men together, but what does it say? In the New American Standard, it says, now Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself. Exalted himself. Is it always a good idea to exalt yourself? It usually doesn't end well. Right? When you exalt yourself. Sometimes we end up eating, what is that word? Or what is that bird? Crow, that's right. If you want to write out beside that, 1 Peter 5:6, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 6, God should be the one who does the exalting, not ourselves. And so Adonijah got kind of the cart before the horse, and he exalted himself, and he said, what? I will be king. I will be king. Now, why would he think that he could be king? Who is this guy? Who is this guy? Do you remember from 1 and 2 Samuel? He's Adonijah's the son of David. And not only that, he is currently the oldest son of David. And what do we know about kingdoms, kingships? What do they normally get passed down to? To the oldest son. To the oldest. And so he's saying, I'm going to be king. And so in doing so, he prepared chariots and 50 horsemen to run before him. And it says in verse 6 that his father never crossed him, saying at any time, why have you done so? Now, this is not necessarily a situation where David said, why are you doing this? This may be a commentary on the fact that David never really got crosswise with Adonijah. David never told Adonijah no. This is not necessarily in the context of or saying that King David never sat up and said, hey, why are you doing this thing? But maybe in the context of saying that he never told Adonijah he couldn't have anything or never kept anything from him. And so it's kind of commentary on that. And so he also says he was a very handsome man, which apparently, you know, in times past had been a qualification for being a king. When we think about Saul, right? David wasn't exactly shabby either. And so he was a handsome guy, and he was born after Absalom. So it gives us that rank. And now we know Absalom's what already? Dead. Absalom's not all around. There was another son, I cannot remember his name right now, that was after Absalom, but he's mentioned once and then never mentioned again. So it is assumed that he died at a young age. And so Adonijah is technically next in line. And so he conferred with Joab. Who's Joab? Do you remember? The commander of the army. That's right. Joab was the commander of the king's army, which has some power to it. And with Abathar, the priest. And they started following Adonijah, and they helped him. But Zadok, the priest, Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, Nathan, the prophet, Shimei, Rei, and the mighty men who belonged to David were not with Adonijah. So we have divided split here on what's going on. These other names that were mentioned are powerful players in the thing that's going on in Jerusalem. Zadok was a priest that was kind of warned David before. Benaiah is the commander of David's mighty men, or those mercenaries that belong to David. Nathan the prophet, obviously the mouthpiece for God. And so they have this going on. And Adonijah then begins to sacrifice sheep, oxen, fatlings, and he goes and he invites all the brothers of the king's sons and all the men of Judah, except in verse 10, who did he not invite? He did not invite Nathan, the prophet, the mighty men, and Solomon his brother. Now, why do you think he didn't invite them? Well, exactly. If you're going to have a party and you want people to exalt you and you want people, you're going to invite your yes men, right? You're not going to invite the people that are going to be like, hey, wait a second, the kingdom was already given to Solomon. God has already named Solomon as the one who's going to be king. Why are you doing this thing? And so, of course, he didn't invite them to the party because they would be naysayers. So it's not like he was doing this thinking that it's the right thing to do. I'm the oldest son. I need to do this. He's doing it because he is trying to subvert what should be happening. And so that's what's going on in this in verses 1 through 10. 11 through 27, we have the countermeasures of Nathan. And I need to put this up there. So Solomon's coronation is what we're dealing with here. Yes, I do have it divided out. Excellent. So we have the countermeasures of Nathan. So Nathan begins to kind of make sure that what needs to happen happens. And he goes and he speaks to who in verse 11? Who does Nathan speak to? Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon. And so he begins to tell her, hey, are you hearing what's going on? Are you understanding what's happening right now? You need to take measures because David doesn't know about it in verse 11. And he says, if you don't take measures, if you don't listen to my counsel, what's going to happen in verse 12? You're going to die. They're going to kill you till you die of it if you do not take measures right now. Because if Adonijah comes into play and comes into power, he's going to get rid of anybody who's going to challenge his throne. And so you need to make sure you do this. And so the advice is go to the king, tell the king and ask the king, is this really what you decided to do? Wasn't Solomon, my son, the one who was named to be king in your place? And then when you're doing that, I'll come in and I'll talk to David as well. And so they kind of rehearse what needs to happen, what they need to say to David in this state. Now, verse 15, they go and do that. Verse 15 says that Abishag is there ministering to David as she normally would. And so he goes in and speaks to her. And she says, "My lord, you swore to your maidservant by the Lord your God, saying, 'Surely your son Solomon shall be king after me and shall sit on my throne.' Now behold, Adonijah is king, and now, my lord the king, you do not know it." And so she tells him what's going on. We're kind of getting the picture that David is really not aware of what's going on in the daily affairs, right? He's not aware of what's going on, and so she tells them. If you want to write out there, 1 Chronicles chapter 22, verses 9 through 13, where God kind of specifically mentions this. 1 Chronicles chapter 9, verses 22, chapter 22, verses 9 through 13. 1 Chronicles 22, 9 through 13. That'll give you the context there where that's mentioned. And so she tells them what's going on. And in verse 20, it says, As for you now, my lord the king, the eyes of all Israel are on you to tell them who shall sit on the throne." So what is happening here? So you have this faction over here trying to raise up and take power. You have Solomon, who everybody knows Solomon was supposed to be king. He's supposed to be the next guy. And now Adonijah is exalting himself, and the people are like, "So where do we go? What do we do? Who do we pick?" And so she's saying, "Everybody's looking at you, David, to bless. Who are you going to bless? Who are you going to pick? Who are you going to name as king?" And then in comes, it says that basically she tells him, if you don't pick, if Adonijah is the one that's going to be king, then we're going to be outcasts. We're going to be considered offenders or sinners or outcasts. And then verse 22, while she's speaking, who comes in? Nathan, right? Nathan comes in and then says, here's Nathan the prophet. And he kind of begins, he comes from the standpoint where, did you make a decision? So it's like coming into your boss and something went sideways at work. And you come into the boss and say, "Hey, did you decide to do this? I mean, we had talked in the meeting that this was going to happen, but this is what's happening now, you know." And so he kind of comes in from that standpoint and says to the king, "My lord the king, have you said Adonijah shall be king after me and shall sit on the throne? For he's the one that's gone out and he's kind of doing that right now. Did you say that was going to happen? You know, we didn't talk. It's been a week since we met." You know, so he's kind of coming at it from that direction. And so you have a mother concerned about the son and the safety of their life. You have Nathan the prophet coming in saying, "Did you change what was supposed to happen?" And then they kind of put pressure on him to make king, and so to decide who's going to be king. Because Nathan tells him who's involved in everything, what's going on in the gravity of the situation. And he says in verse 26, Nathan says, "But me, even your servant, and Zadok the priest, and Benaniah the son of Jehoiada, and your servant and Solomon, he has not invited." So he's telling them exactly what's going on. Verse 28, we have the coronation of Solomon, beginning of verse 28. "Then King David said..." He's an older man, but he's still taking action. He could have vacillated. It would have been easier just to say, "You know what? He's already doing it. He's already got, you know, he's already made the sacrifices. It'd be a waste." He could have said that. Sometimes it's easier to go with what's ever happening, right? Instead of saying, "Wait, no, we got to stop this, back up, and do the right thing." And so David, even though he's an older guy, he still decides that this is what needs to happen. Then King David said, "Call Bathsheba to me." And she came in the king's presence, and the king said, "As the Lord lives, who has redeemed my life from all distress, surely I, as I vowed to you by the Lord God of Israel, saying, 'Your son Solomon shall be king after me, and he shall sit on my throne in my place,' I will indeed do this day." And so he does, he makes right, he does what is supposed to be done. And then she says, "Thank you," basically, "my Lord David, king, live forever." And then King David said, "Call to me Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet, and Benaniah the son of Jehoiada." And so he, Benaniah, remember, if you remember, he is the commander of the Cherethites and Perizzites, basically the mercenaries. And he calls them all together. And the king said to them, "Take with you..." Now listen to what happens. Listen to the details of what happens with Solomon. He says, "Take with you my servants of our Lord, and have my son Solomon ride on my own mule, and bring him down to Gion. Let Zadok the priest of Nathan the prophet anoint him there as king over Israel, and blow a trumpet saying, 'Long live King Solomon,' and you shall come up after him, and he shall come and sit on my throne and be king in my place, and I have appointed him to be ruler over all of Israel and Judah." And so this is a process that takes place to make sure everybody knows that Solomon is going to be king. Now, as we read those details, did it remind you of anything else? Did it remind you of anybody else who rode on a donkey? It's interesting. It's interesting here, the details. You have a triumphant king who is crowned. Jesus also rode on the colt of a donkey, right? He was anointed that week by by Mary, who was a sinner. In mocking, they said, "Here is the king of the Jews," right? And he was also one who sat on the throne of his father, and even sat on David's throne, the figurative David's throne in heaven. So it's interesting, as I was reading this, the similarities between Christ, the king, on that week when he was brought in to Jerusalem. It is any wonder that they were thinking king? Do we see, as we unfold more of Israel's history, why they were thinking earthly kingdom? Earthly kingdom. Do we blame them? Here's something that is reminiscent of when a king took power. And so we can't really blame them whenever they think about the earthly concept of a king. And so this is amazing how that lines up. And so they did this thing for Solomon, and he is kinged, or is crowned, and everybody's shouting about it. Now, he's anointed king. In beginning of verse 38, they anoint him. They take a horn of oil from the tent. Verse 39, they say, "Long live King Solomon." And all the people went up after him. And the people were playing on flutes, rejoicing with great joy, so that the earth shook at their noise. So this was no small thing. It wasn't like done in secret. The whole city was shaking because of the noise of Solomon. Now, let's go over to Team Adonijah at this point, okay? In verse 41, "And now Adonijah and all the guests who were with him heard as they finished eating," you know, they're wiping their mouths, you know, eating. It's like, what is that noise? And when Joab heard the sound, the trumpet, and he asked, "Why is the city making such an uproar?" And while he was still speaking, behold, Jonathan, the son of Abathiah, the priest, came, and Adonijah said, "Come in, for you are a valiant man, and give us good news." Ha, 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 you know, like a... Wrong. No. He said, "No, our King David has made Solomon king. The king has also sent him Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet, Benaiah the Jehoiada, the son of Jehoiada, then the Cherethites and the Perizzites have made him to ride on the king's mule, and Zadok the priest and the prophet have anointed him king of Gihon, and the people have come rejoicing. Besides, Solomon has even taken seat on the throne of the kingdom of King of David." Now, I imagine as all these things are kind of being said to Adonijah, his face is going a little bit longer, right? And it's getting a little quieter in their tent, right? A little quieter on Team Adonijah. And he says, "Moreover, the king's servants come and bless the Lord King David, saying, 'May your God make the name of Solomon better than your name in his throne,'" and all these things that are happening. And he talks about the accolades that are giving. And then verse 49, "Then all the guests of Adonijah were terrified. And they arose, and each went his own way." So, I don't know if you've ever been in an awkward situation, but you usually want to leave awkward moments, and that's kind of what happens. Everybody's like, "You know what, I got to go wash my hair or something," and it's time to leave, right? It's time to leave. They have chosen poorly on Team Adonijah, and so this is what happens. And what does Adonijah decide to do? Adonijah was afraid, and he does what? Verse 51. He grabs the horns of the altar. What in the world is that about? Now let's clarify. He's talking. He grabs the horns of what are horns of an altar? So at the corners of the altar, they had these protruding things that kind of stood up. You had one on the golden altar, and you also had one on the brazen, the bronze, the altar of bronze. And he runs up into the temple area where the altar of bronze is and grabs hold of the altar and says, "Base. I'm on, you can't touch me, I'm on base." It's that kind of thing. It's sort of a plea for sanctuary, not quite a Quasimodo kind of thing, but it is that sort of concept where he pleads for sanctuary. And what does he say? He goes up there. And Solomon, and he says, "Let King Solomon swear to me today that he will not put the servant to death with the sword." He could have said, "Fine, I'll drown you," you know, whatever. But Solomon said, "If he is now," this is pretty smart. Solomon says, "If he is worthy, a worthy man, not one of his hairs will fall to the ground. But if wickedness is found in him, he will die." Remember that. We'll come back to that. Later on. So King Solomon sent and brought him down from the altar, and he came and prostrated for himself before King Solomon, and Solomon said what? "Go to your room. Go to your house," right? And so basically we have this kind of house arrest situation probably for him. So that is the coronation of Solomon. There's issue. There's a lot of drama with that. Now, Solomon's rule begins to be established. And a lot of moving and shaking, and things are kind of making, getting things kind of squared away in this next chapter. In chapter 2, verses 1 through 12, we have David's last counsel to Solomon. And it says in verse 2, "As David's time drew near, he charged Solomon his son, saying, 'I am going the way of all the earth,'" which is to say what? "I'm going to die." It is normal. This is what happens. David's seen death. He's been around death. This is what happens. And he says, "Be strong, therefore, and show yourself a man. Keep the charge of the Lord your God. Walk in his ways. Keep his statutes, commandments, ordinances, and testimonies according to what is written in the law, that you may succeed in all that you do wherever you turn." Right out beside that, Psalm 1. Psalm 1. That same kind of sentiment is in Psalm 1. "You'll be like a tree planted by rivers of water, and whatever you do will prosper." Psalm 1. Is this sound advice? Pretty sound advice, right? Does David know that this is the case? Of course he does. He knows God will take care of him. He's done that for David. He's giving his son sound advice. Do this. And he reminds them of what God has promised about the throne, that you got to walk after God in truth. And then he also says in verse 5, so he gives them some counsel on his relationship with God. Then he gives him some counsel in his relationship with some men that are there. And he says, Now also you know Joab the son of Zeruiah did to me what he did to the two commanders of the armies of Israel, to Abner the son of Ner and to Amasa the son of Jeshur, whom he killed. You remember those stories? He kind of just walked up to him and said, "Hi, how you doing?" and killed him. Those two stories. One of whom he gutted and kind of left on the road. So those guys... David said he shed the blood of war in peace. He put the blood of war on his belt, on his waist, on his sandals, on his feet, and he acted. And so he says, "So act according to your wisdom." He says this twice in these verses. Act according to your wisdom. So was Solomon already sort of known for his wisdom? Apparently he was. I mean, he is a dad. Dads kind of have to say that. But apparently Solomon's already sort of known for his wisdom. And so he says, don't let him go down. Don't let him go to death in peace. So get some retribution there. Show kindness to the sons of Barzillai. Remember, Barzillai was the guy that gave refuge to David whenever he left. He was fleeing from Absalom. He said, you know, let them eat at your table. And then Shimei. Remember Shimei? The one that's cursing David when he left, when Absalom kind of left because of Absalom. And there was that guy that was cursing him the whole way. And then, you know, his commander was like, let me kill him. And then he said, no, we're not going to kill him. But now we're going to kill him. So, you know, he talks about that happened there. And he says, again, you're a wise man. Deal with them with your wisdom. And then David slept with his fathers. And he's buried in the city of David. The days he reigned over Israel, 40 years. 7 years he reigned in Hebron. 33 years he reigned in Jerusalem. And Solomon set on the king. And his kingdom was firmly established, verse 12. And so here we have this our last kind of discussion about David. Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly why he didn't take care of that himself. We're not really given any information about that. It's possible that kind of in his older age, he's done. You know, I'm done with that kind of war and that kind of stuff. We don't know exactly. But he's given these things to Solomon. And he gives Solomon several things that we'll kind of see later on. One of which was building the temple, right? It was a big undertaking that he gave to Solomon. And in this case, with these men, he said, these are some loose ends you need to tie up. And so those are some things he needed to do. And so in verses 18 through 25, we have Adonijah's second conspiracy. So what do you do if you don't succeed the first time? Try again. And so Adonijah tries again. And so he comes to Bathsheba and he asks, he said, hey, can I, she said, do you come in peace? He's like, yeah, I'm coming in peace. Totally, everything's cool. So there's still tension, obviously. And he says, you know, I was supposed to be king. You know, everybody expected me to be king, right? Not true. Not true. In his own mind, that's what he was thinking. And he says, you know what, is it all right if I have Abishag the Shunammite as a wife? Can I have her as a wife? 5 minutes. Okay. And she's like, sure, let me go talk to Solomon about that. And so she goes and talks to Solomon about it. Solomon says, I might as well just give him the kingdom and everything else, right? If he's going to take her to be his wife, he says down in verse 22, and why are you asking Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? Ask for him also the kingdom, for he is my older brother. Even for him, for Abathar the priest and for Joab the son of Zerith. Why don't you just give him the whole thing? Just give him everything. If he's going to take, why would he say that? Why would he say that? So weird. David, Solomon, you're overacting. Do you remember back what happened earlier with Absalom, who knew David's concubines in front of everybody? There's still that sort of concept where if you kind of can have the concubines of the king, it carries with it sort of a power, as a power play. So this was a power play that he was trying to make for the throne still. And so remember what we said, if there's no wickedness in your actions, then you get to live in your house. But it's apparent that there's some wickedness still in Adonijah. And Solomon says, you know what? You're just going to have to die. And so verse 25, so King Solomon sent Benaniah. Benaniah is the commander of David's mighty men. And it says that he fell upon him so that he died. He probably didn't trip on this guy, right? That means he pounced upon him like a tiger and killed the dude. This happened several times. That phrase is said, he fell upon him so that he died. Benaniah becomes this sort of like the hitman for Solomon in these first few chapters. And so that happens. And then we have other conspirators that that took place. I think I miss... Yeah. So Shimei died. Shemaiah died, or other conspirators died as well. Joab died because he was involved in the conspiracy in verse 28. And so the news came to Joab, and Joab had followed Adonijah. And so he runs to the horns of the altar, right? Base, base. And the king's like, no, that's not going to happen. He sends Benaiah down there to kill him. And he says, no, you can't kill me. You couldn't kill him in there on the altar. You couldn't do that. That's kind of like not kosher, literally. You couldn't do that. So they brought him out. And he said, all the blood of these men are on you. You did these things. Benaiah went and fell upon him and put him to death in verse 34. And so he was buried at his own house. Okay, so also at that time, Zadok the priest became priest over Abiathar. Did the second bell ring already? No, okay. Look over at verse 26. I skipped over this. Then to Abiathar the priest, the king said, go to Ananoth, your own field, for you deserve to die, but I will not put you to death at this time, because you carry the ark of David, of the Lord, before my father David, and because you were afflicted with everything my father was afflicted. So Solomon dismissed Abiathar from being priest to the Lord in order to fulfill the word of the Lord which he had spoken concerning the house of Eli in Shiloh. That was spoken of way back in 1 Samuel chapter 2, verses 27 through 36. So this was something that was a long time coming, but basically we have a changing of the guard. The lineage of the priest, the high priest, now changed. And so it's going to be according to the family of Zadok. It's going to be through his lineage. His sons are going to be the high priests instead of the one, the lineage of Eli. So again, a long time coming, but there's that change. And then 36 through 46, Shimei is killed as well. He was put on house arrest, basically, to shorten this up. He was put on house arrest, told not to leave. Some of his slaves ran away, so he chased after them and came back. And when he came back, Solomon's like, I told you not to leave. I told you not to leave. And guess who fell upon him so that he died of it? Yes, Benaiah, the hitman of Solomon, killed him until he died of it, down in verse 46. And then it says, thus the kingdom was established in the hands of Solomon. And then in verses 1 through 3 of chapter 3, we have this intro to the reign. Solomon formed a marriage alliance with Pharaoh, for the king of Egypt. The King James, or New King James, says became the son-in-law of king of Pharaoh. So that means he married, who did he marry? The Pharaoh's daughter, right? I wonder if he learned how to walk like one of them. Anyway, sorry. We'll talk more about that later. But right out there beside that, Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 3 through 6. Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 3 through 6, we have, they were not supposed to marry foreign people. And Solomon, we have this snippet of Solomon's reign. Verse 3, we'll finish here. Now Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statue of his father David, except he sacrificed and burnt incense on the high places. He was doing good, except. And that kind of becomes a commentary on the reign of Solomon. Thank you very much for your time tonight.